This is Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. Data Lore. Hello and welcome to episode 46 of Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Yannick, I'm the French guy from Switzerland, and joining me tonight, as always, is someone who is 35,185,185 OLED screen away from me is my good friend Dave. Hello, Dave. How are you?
Hi, Yannick. I'm very well indeed. How are you?
I'm fine. And that reference to the OLED screen is, of course, because I just received the package from our good friends over at Pimoroni. And since I had no idea what to put in this welcome blurb, and I had my OLED screen just in front of my eyes, I just took a pair of calipers and I measured it, and it's 35,200,000-ish times the width of that screen between you and me.
Indeed, and the irony, of course, that the place you got them from is about 970 kilometers away from you, and about 20 kilometers away from me.
Yes,
is certainly not lost.
Do you think we can ask Pimoroni to send us 35,200,000 of them, and actually do a link between you and me?
That would be utterly amazing.
Yeah.
Completely pointless, but really exciting to at least attempt to do. Well, can you imagine how long it would take to lay 35.18 million of these things?
Not really, no.
And that's just the screen, though, not the board it sat on.
Yes. Yeah. So we would have to wire everything and yeah. Okay, forget it.
Yeah. That's a lot of soldering.
Yeah. In this episode, we are not going to talk about soldering, but we are going to review Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1, Episode 13, Data Lore. And we may or may not have a thing to discuss after that. Maybe we're just going to discuss while we review this episode. We don't have any guests. We usually have a guest every 2 weeks, but we don't have one tonight, and that's perfectly okay.
Yeah, it works.
And after that, I think it's going to be time to go to bed. So why don't we start the review of Data Lore? So in the teaser, the Enterprise is passing Omicron Theta, and they stop to investigate the site of Data's discovery. However, Data is in his quarters practicing sneezing. Wesley Crusher asks him if he has a cold. Data has never heard of such a thing, at least not in reference to an illness, so Wesley has to explain. Data presses that humans sneeze for other reasons, and he'd like to learn how to do it so he will better fit in with the crew. Wesley wonders out loud how Data could be practicing sneezing in a time like this, as they are about to arrive at his home planet. Data clarifies that he is excited to see his point of origin, but that he is also interested in sneezing. There's a theme here.
Yeah.
On the bridge, Lieutenant Tashaya signals that the planet is Class M, but has no life, not even vegetation, which is strange, as the crew that found Data reported farmlands. Picard would have loved to lead the away team, but Riker is opposed to that idea, given that the entire colony disappeared. Instead, the first officer leads the away team that beams down to the spot where Data was found. I don't know how long Brent Spiner practiced to sneeze. He was really doing a bad job at it.
He was doing an awful job at it, but it's no worse than my kids pretending to sneeze, I suppose. But the faces that he was pulling was quite amazing.
Yeah, I loved it. And I love the fact that he was you know, maybe almost more interesting in learning how to sneeze than to actually find out where he was, where he has been discovered. That was fun. That was data.
Yeah.
Plain old data.
Certainly. Did you notice that the away team used that turbo lift on the right by the viewer again?
Yes.
Seems to be a common thing.
Yeah, sometimes they do. Well, I haven't found any logic in their use of this turbo lift.
Presumably, they were heading down to the transporter.
Yeah.
And usually they'd use the one over at the right at the back.
Yeah.
Not, I don't know.
I don't know either. Maybe they, you know, they had to use it. I don't know. They have a quota or something.
Yeah, or maybe the password expires if you don't use it within 2 weeks or something.
Something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something
yeah.
like that. So, Act 1. The OA team arrives on a dead planet and starts analyzing the soil. Data recognizes the area and points to where he was found 20 meters away. It is a hollow with a rock wall. He was found in the open and was apparently activated by a marker beacon that detected the crew's presence. The crew of the... what's the name of the...
The USS Tripoli.
The Tripoli, yeah. Which I understood as Triple A, and I was like, what? What did they call the Triple A? why would they do that? But no, it was the Triple E.
Yes.
Which I found out when I turned on the subtitles. Jordi examines the rock wall with his visor and sees that it was man-made. That triggers a memory in Data's brain, and he remembers that the colonists hoped to remain hidden, but their fear to being discovered led them to store their memories in him. Yeah, so when Tasha analyzed the planet, she said that there was no vegetation, when clearly there are some green things on the ground and trees, although they are dead, but they are here. Also, Jordi says the soil is almost completely lifeless, while, you know, not 10 seconds before, Riker in his log entry said that there was nothing. So I sense a problem of consistency here, you know, with...
I never spotted that.
Really? That's the first thing I noticed, that when they arrived, there was some vegetation and also the contradiction between Jordi and Riker.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, there's something, but it's a recurring theme in Star Trek, that the entire colony disappeared. They don't know how. They don't know why the planet is now dead. But still, they beam on the planet without any kind of protection. So that's that's a bit careless, I think.
Yeah, that does seem a bit foolhardy.
Yeah.
As they didn't know why they disappeared.
Nope.
There could be some non-life form, because I'm guessing they would have scanned the planet before they beamed down to it. There's no non-life forms on there, but, amusingly, there were androids.
Yes. Well, android, at this time, they didn't know there was a second one. But,
they didn't.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time that something doesn't register on the sensors. So, yeah, it's a bit strange that they would beam like that on a planet that is now dead and from which an entire colony disappeared. But,
yeah,
you know, they can't spend 15 minutes
getting... Sure, Yar would have carried a phaser.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they would have... If there was a danger, they would have sent a red shot first. So, that's okay. You know, it's like
that's fair.
It's
that's
like
fair.
Miners when they go down the mine with a canary, yeah.
And
when the canary dies, then it's time to
Davy lamp.
Yeah.
Oh no, that's not a Davy lamp, is it? That was something different. The Davy lamp was to determine whether there were gases down there, and the flame would burn a different colour.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the canary thing was called.
I don't know. Jordi finds a hidden door in the wall that opens onto a passage that leads to an underground shelter. No life signs register on Tasha's tricorders, even inside the complex. The away team goes down one of the corridors before coming to a door that leads to a laboratory where data records impressions of his basic functions being tested. There are children's drawing on the wall, all apparently of the same scene. Data doesn't know what they represent, only a sense that they refer to something dangerous. Why would some scientist display those kind of drawings from their children? I mean, I put on some drawings of my daughter, but they're usually the nice ones. So, and especially since it's inside the bunker and the bunker has been, hidden.
Yeah.
Which actually begs the question, how did they hide the laboratory if they were still inside with the rocks outside? But that's a whole other question.
No, I don't know that one. But I did ask the same question as to what these pictures were doing. They were clearly drawn by children, but they weren't what you would classify as children's pictures.
No.
So the only thing I can pull from that is that the scientists, laboratorists that were in the laboratory knew what those pictures represented and were possibly keeping them as some form of reference. Because if you have a large number of children, each drawing the same thing, there will be some notable differences between them where you can combine everything into one thing and get a composite of what this thing may actually be.
But let's suppose that those children had some kind of premonition, which has never been said. So we don't. I thought that they had seen the thing, drawn it, and so that would mean there was people still alive inside the laboratory after the thing happened.
Yes.
So that's
unless they were hiding in the laboratory and they drew those pictures in order to assist anybody that helped rescue them or discover the laboratory or something after the fact. I really don't know.
No.
It is weird. It is really weird.
Yeah.
And we get no clue later on as to what these might actually have a purpose for.
Yeah. Riker presses Data and asks if he can remember anything else about the lab. Data replies that he can remember one of the machines being used by a Dr. Noonien Soong. LaForge recognizes the name of Earth's foremost robotics scientist. He tried to create a positronic brain but failed and then disappeared. Now they realize he went to Omicron Theta under a different name to continue his work. I find it a bit strange that Data didn't remember anything about Dr. Soong before. Why would that memory be erased? Especially since it seems like Dr. Soong left Data on this planet to show the world that he actually managed to create an android. So why the whole beginning of this episode is weird.
Was Data not activated by the rescue party from the USS Tripoli?
Yes.
Was that him being activated for the first time?
Yes.
Then he may not have known about Dr. Soong.
Well, he does.
Despite the fact that he was the spitting image of him.
Yeah, but nobody knows that. He knows about Dr. Soong because he just remembered. But, yeah, I find it, yeah, the whole, amnesic android.
Yeah.
There does
seem to be quite a number of misalignments.
Shortcuts.
Yeah, in this.
In the beginning of this episode, in the first act.
But also, they mentioned that Soong came to Omicron Theta under a different name, but we never actually found out what that name was, did we?
No, maybe, that's just a supposition because he disappeared. So they just supposed he was here under a different name, but maybe he was just here under his own name, but nobody cared to tell anyone else. We don't know.
I suppose.
Data, LaForge, and Riker continue to search the lab, while Natasha Yar and Worf search the rest of the bunker. They find molds for making Data's skin, and Yar reports that the rest of the bunker is empty. Then LaForge comes across a storage area. Inside, they find another android, identical to Data. Data is excited by the discovery, and wonders if that could be another android like him, or even his brother. Riker agrees to bring the other android back on the Enterprise and try to assemble it. Now, again, this storage area was full of smoke and stuff like that, and they just...
And he just opened it.
Yeah. So, yeah, okay, let's do stupid things in Act 1 so we can, you know, concentrate on doing good things on the rest of the episode.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, the other thing that really jumped out at me, identical?
Yeah,
it looked nothing like Data.
No, absolutely not.
It looks like what Data would have looked like if somebody had made a really bad waxwork model of him.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, absolutely. It was like, no, you got. I mean, it's a TV series, so you have to have some kind of imagination. But come on, it was. Obviously, they missed that.
Yeah, it wasn't the best facsimile.
No.
of Data.
Not at all. No. Anyway, we're already on Act 2. The review was very short on Memory Alpha. I added stuff, but I think it's gonna be a quick one. Unless we keep on, you know, talking between the...
Oh, do not worry. I've got loads of holes to make later on.
Yeah. I don't worry. So, Act 2. Back on the Enterprise, a team of engineers and technicians try to reassemble the android. Chief Engineer...
Argyle!
Chief Engineer Argyle.
He's back!
He confirms that it has the same body parts as Data. Does that mean that Lore is fully functional too?
Oh, really? Do you know what? That hadn't even crossed my mind, and I really wish you hadn't said that.
Argyle then very hesitantly asks if he can examine Data if he needs more information, comparing the internal circuitry, and Data agrees with a nod of the head. Now, since when did Crusher call Data Mr. Data? I mean, it's the first time, episode 11? And it's, I think it's the first time. I don't know they had a...
No, I do not know.
No. Also, the parts that we saw on the screen, you have to have a lot of imagination to think that once this thing is reassembled, it will give something that looks like Data.
You could take that one stage further. You have to have a lot of imagination to believe that Data is actually Android in the first place.
Yes, but yeah,
it's two sides of the same coin.
Yeah,
it's very difficult to imagine Data as an Android because he is so fluid. Mm-hmm. In his movements, and I'm on about not his entire body, obviously, but the bits of the body that we know about. So the opposite end of that is to take obvious robotic parts and then assemble them into something that looks like Data. So, yeah, the whole imagination thing has to play such a big part in the entire series, really.
Yes. Data joins Captain Picard, Commodore Riker, and Geordi LaForge in the observation lounge to discuss the situation. Everyone seems to be tiptoeing around the subject, so Picard reminds everybody that if it feels awkward to be reminded that Data is a machine, then just remember that humans are just another kind of machine. He then states that they should handle the situation like they would anything else and continue the briefing.
This was an amazing scene to watch, because if you looked at how Riker reacted to that particular little speech by Picard, he was almost like a child. It was like a level of excitement that he's now suddenly understood something that really he should have known already.
Yeah.
And while I can understand LaForge being a little bit cautious about discussing things about Data and about this other android whilst Data is in the room, Riker certainly shouldn't have been.
No.
And I just thought that Riker's reaction to this wasn't befitting a first officer.
No. He knocked three times on the table as you said, as a child who suddenly realized something. Really. It's not the only time in the episode. There's another time, I don't remember exactly when I told myself that he was grinning like a child too. Maybe it's
I think I remember. I think it was towards the end.
Yeah.
But yes, I know the bit you mean.
Okay. Data wonders why he was given a human form, and Geordi says that it must be to help Data interact with human more easily. Riker then shows the captain the drawings they took from the lab, suggesting that they might be linked to the colony's disappearance. I don't know how, you know, what they're going to make of that, but they took the drawings. That's pretty much everything they had anyway, so.
Mm.
But
it's a bit of a jump.
Yeah.
To go from the drawings to the colony's disappearance. Yeah.
But that's all they've got. And as you said, it's four drawings, probably from four different children, you know, describing the same thing. So, yeah, I can understand why they would think that it's linked.
We're told they're from children, but we don't actually know that for a fact, do we?
Nope. How could we?
Exactly. They could just be drawn by adults who can't draw.
Yeah.
Like me, for example.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Now, did you notice that everywhere they go, usually, where whether it's a spaceship or a station or something like that, there's always video recordings and logs, but not there?
How do you mean?
Well, when they board an abandoned ship or a ship, they always, you know, look at the logs, and they have video logs.
Yes.
Or, you know, someone recording, we're being attacked, we're going to... but not there.
Yes.
Not there. So,
No. You're absolutely right. Yeah. I didn't pick up on it, but no, you're spot on.
Yeah.
But maybe they didn't have CCTV or...
Maybe
it was so top secret as to what they were doing that... Maybe they didn't keep
Dr. Soon records. Didn't want to be recognized, so he banned all recording devices. Maybe. I don't know.
Possibly, yeah.
Yes. Dr. Crusher calls, and Data returns to the lab where the other android is being assembled. He shows Crusher his off switch, asking her to keep it secret. Then she and Argyle open him up to check his internal construction so they could replicate that on the other android. After they close him up, Picard and Riker arrived in sickbay. The other android has been fully assembled, but he is still not active. Picard wonders aloud which was made first. Suddenly, the second android comes alive and says that Data was. He calls himself Lore and says he was made to replace the imperfect Data. Did you notice the wonderful 80s music?
No.
No? The kind of music you have in the movies and TV series of the time, when there's a scene where something is going to be horribly wrong, or, you know, suspense music that's a bit cheesy by now, by our modern standards, but
I'm probably immune to it with all the awful B movie films that Caroline watches. But I didn't pick up on it, but obviously I would have noticed it. But it would have just added to the atmosphere, of what we were seeing.
Yeah, except that, you know, by our modern standard, that music was more. Yeah, distracting, I would say. As you said, we have heard that on so many B or C or D or E movies that every time I hear music like that, I tend to laugh rather than, you know, concentrate on what's on the screen. But anyway.
Yeah.
Why would Data tell Crusher about his off switch?
Now, that scene was wrong.
Blue for no apparent reason.
I have no idea. It had no relevance. I mean, it clearly does later on, but at the time it was done, it just seemed really, really odd, really weird, and quite intrusive.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, going up to Crusher and effectively saying, "Hey, do you want to see my arse switch?" But the fact that he told Crusher about it, apparently for no reason, and then turned around and said, "Oh, please keep this a secret." Well, if you wanted to keep it a secret, why would you have told her in the first place?
Exactly. I don't know.
It was really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It was almost like, you know, go get a room.
Yes, that's it, yeah. Yeah, I didn't understand why at the time. And even, it doesn't really make sense, even with what we know from the end of the episode, because... Well, we could have just figured that there was such an off switch when it was used. It would have been...
Yes.
I mean, if... Let's imagine, for example, that Data was sleeping, and you know, they had to stop Lore, and then Crusher would use that to stop him. Now, that would have made sense.
That idea just came into my head. So, yeah, maybe that did work, but that wasn't...
That wasn't the case.
So. It wasn't apparent that that was the reason why he would have said it.
Yeah, so, don't know.
No. So, as we were watching Law in his box that he was contained in, even before he was activated, the old eyelids were going absolutely crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know how it is when you've got, well, you probably do know this, when you've got a small child and they're pretending to be asleep,
mm-hmm.
and their eyelids are going all over the place because they're trying to keep their eyes closed and pretending they're asleep.
Yeah.
But that's exactly what Law was doing before he was apparently activated.
Was it Law or was it Brent Spiner?
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I thought it was more an actor thing than a character thing.
Maybe. But I also picked up on the exaggerated blinking that he did, which I thought might have been an indication that there was a flaw within the android.
You think?
That might have caught... Well, yeah, okay, we know now that there might have been a flaw that may have ended up with some kind of system failure within Law at some point later on. I just found it amusing that he said that he was made to replace Data, who was deemed imperfect.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, he himself seems to have this fault.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. He's far from being perfect, even at this point when we just learn about him.
Yes.
So, moving on. Act 3. Data and Picard talk in the ready room. The captain is troubled by the fact that Lore described Data as imperfect. But Data simply dismisses that as meaning Lore possesses certain abilities Data doesn't. However, Data believes that both he and Lore have very similar physical and mental capabilities. He also notes that Picard refers to Lore as it, meaning he, too, belongs to the category of things. Picard then asks Data where his loyalties lie, and Data assures him that his loyalty is to Picard and Starfleet completely.
Well, Picard didn't actually ask the question.
No.
Data worked out what the question was before Picard even had to say it. And yet, once Data had said that his loyalty lies with Picard and Starfleet, Picard then said, well, I was certain of that.
Was he?
So what question was he asking he already knew that that was the case?
But was he certain of that? The way he said it, I kind of, you know, picked up a little bit of doubt in this.
I don't know. It's the way he said, well, I was certain of that, seemed a little bit exaggerated, perhaps. But I didn't pick up doubt from that.
Okay.
No.
Okay, so that's just me being paranoid then.
Yeah.
So if data is a thing, is there something such a thing as an internet of data in the 24th century? Like, we put many datas in the network. Just a silly thought when I was writing the review.
It's called whatever that thing that came up in Terminator. What was the name of the
company?
The network.
Cyberbank?
Skynet.
Skynet, yes.
Skynet. Yes. The internet of data became Skynet.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was interesting that while they were speaking, Picard kept saying it about Lore. It seems strange, maybe because we're so used to refer to data as he, that it felt strange that Lore was referred to as it. But so it was a very good remark from Data.
It was, but I think it also goes to explain one of the differences. Okay, going back to the bit at the beginning where Data said that he believed that both Lore and himself had the same physical and mental capabilities, what he didn't mention was emotional. Now, obviously, we find out more about that later on. But the fact that Picard was so... I wasn't keen to say, but the fact that he was automatically referring to Lore as an it probably more explains that Picard's feeling towards Data was that of a human, not of a machine. Mm-hmm. So had Data had more of an emotional quotient, a bit more of a human understanding of language, perhaps, he should have actually taken that as a compliment.
Yeah.
That he was being referred to as a he, which, you know, he's a machine. He's an android. That Picard's referring to him as a he should take that as a compliment, and understanding that the classification of Lore as it is because he sees Lore as a machine, mm-hmm. as an android.
Yeah, I agree. But Data just noticed the other part, the fact that Lore was referred to as a machine. But yes, I completely agree with you.
And again, it was a good observation. It does show that Data has the ability to pick up on that kind of linguistic difference.
Yes.
As a computer, which of course he is.
Yes. Both Data and Picard go out onto the bridge where Wesley Crusher and LaForge are explaining the helm controls to Lore. Riker then says the first part of the Pythagorean theorem, and Lore unthinkingly completes it, except the last words, which he claims he never really understood in the first place. Data tells him that he will learn more about those things once he is approved for being on the bridge. Lore is worried that he had committed an offense, but Wesley reassures him and tells him that there are a lot of rules to learn. Data remarks that he judges Lore to be superior to him in regards to pleasing humans, to which Lore responds that he was designed to be so human, and that he enjoys pleasing them. That didn't feel right.
Which bit?
The whole thing. But yes. Yeah, especially the last thing. Yeah, I remember the Twilight Zone episode about the alien with the book How to Serve Humans. Have you seen that? This one?
No, I haven't, but no. I'm aware of it.
And in the end, they finally discover that it's actually a cooking recipes book. So I was thinking,
yeah,
is that a weird Android that we have there? Yes.
I think the first thing I had an issue with, how on earth can an Android not understand one of the principles of mathematics, one of the basic principles of mathematics?
Yeah, absolutely.
But he got it, except for the last word.
Yeah.
You either know it or you don't.
Yeah, it's weird. It was weird.
Yeah.
And even past that, how did he end up sitting on the bridge? You know, he has just been reassembled. They don't know him. They don't know what happened to him. They don't know where he's from, what, you know. But yeah, they're all there explaining how to run the spaceship. yeah. Okay.
Yes, and the fact that it was Wesley that then pointed out that there are many rules that need to be learned for being on the bridge, and he looked really smug as he was saying that, because he's like, "Yeah, I've been through that myself, so I know what it feels like." And yet, he was one of the ones that was showing law about health control. So, yeah.
Yeah. I know. Data leads Lore off to show him the rest of the ship, telling him Riker tricked him into revealing he knew more than he let on. He warns him not to underestimate humans, but Lore is dismissive. He tells Data not to be jealous of his abilities. What does it matter that he knows, you know, stuff? I didn't really understood this part. First, why would Lore hide that he knows more than he wants to show? And then why would Data cover for him, if you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. I struggle to understand what the bit about Riker tricking him into revealing more than he knew. No, Riker tricking him into revealing that he knew more than he let on. I wasn't sure what that actually meant. I know what it means.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what it was referring to.
Yeah.
Is he suggesting that Lore forgetting or not knowing the full formula of Pythagoras' theorem was a deliberate act to make people think that actually he wasn't as clever as he is?
Yeah, I think what Data meant and what Lore did is that he started to complete the theorem, but then he realizes that that would reveal like that he actually knows a lot of thing, and that's why he pretended not to know the end of the thing.
Yeah, but, yeah, okay, but yeah. That's
understand is that why would Riker? Because obviously Riker tried to trick him, because when you watch Riker's face when Lore completes the theorem, it was like, you know, frowning, like there's something going on here. So why would Riker try to trick him? I don't know. There was, maybe this episode was longer, and then there was some things left on the cutting table. I don't know. But that was weird.
The whole thing is just wrong, the way it's been laid out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're going to test an Android on something, choose something a bit more complex than Pythagoras.
And don't do that on the bridge.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're going to pretend that you don't know something, don't say all of it except for the last word.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, I've forgotten.
Well, I didn't.
That's the kind of thing I do.
Yeah. Both androids go to Data's quarters, where Data checks up information about Dr. Soong. Lore calls him Often Wrong Soong, a joke that Data doesn't get, of course. Dr. Sung ruined his reputation by making wild promises about the positronic brain, promises that later turned to be true and make both of them possible. Lore asks when he will have a Starfleet uniform like the Data's one. When Data explains that it will take a very long time, Lore replies that the system in place is there to compensate for limited human abilities. He also says that Data is beginning to think like a human, even though both of them are nothing like them. Lore tells Data that he could possess the knowledge of hundreds of millions of life forms of every kind, but doesn't want to say more for the moment. And we could see the face, the twitch on his face once again, and yeah. Very, very strong this time.
Again, I didn't understand what the purpose of that was.
No.
The only thing I could think of at that particular time is it is the only way we can tell the two apart at the moment, other than how they dress.
Yeah.
There's no physical characteristics that make the two dissimilar. Obviously, we know that that's used later on in the episode.
Yeah, because at this moment, we can, without a doubt, say which one is Data, which one is Lore, because Lore doesn't behave like Data. But if Data could not possibly behave like Lore, but we know at this moment, I thought that that was going to be the case, that Lore would later on impersonate Data, which he could.
Almost. To a point. Almost. Yeah, a point.
Data asks Lore again which of them was built first, and Lore admits he himself was. But Dr. Sung made him so perfect that the colonists became envious of him and persuaded Sung to build a less perfect android, Data. Lore was too human, understanding language and humor. Lore points out that he can easily handle speech, use contraction, and understand humor. Lore was less and less amicable, especially the way this whole scene was shot with very close-up shot of Lore and dim light, and so it was obvious that he was turning into a bad guy.
Yeah, I think the only thing that they didn't do was put a goatee on him.
Well, but then we could have thought that it was Data from the Mirror Universe.
So, yeah, of course.
It would be Mirror Data because they all have goatees. I'm sure androids have goatees in the Mirror Universe.
I'm sure they do.
Because why not?
Yeah, well, exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, Alora is becoming very, very cocky, very belligerent at this stage by almost goading Data into... goading's not the right word, but... He's making very sure that Data knows how different the two of them are.
Yeah.
Going into the whole point of contractions, which again doesn't seem relevant until later on. He does the tomato thing as well. And he's mocking Data.
Yeah.
For being who he is.
Yeah, for being too human and trying to be human. Well, he himself is trying to get as far as possible as humans.
Yes. Yes. I wonder if Brent Spiner actually found it easier effectively to play himself as Lore than it was to play Data, because he's a lot more constrained on the kind of behaviours and the kind of language he can use as Data, whereas as Lore... he didn't have those constraints, so he probably could have been himself more.
Yeah, that's a good question. We can ask that question when we have Brent Spiner on the show, which is probably never.
Which will be soon, yeah.
Lore states that he can help Data become more human, and Data says that he's obligated to report all of this to Captain Picard. Lore agrees and asks if he can use the terminal to learn more about the ship and its customs. Data asks that Lor reports everything he knows about the time he spent with the colonists and everything he knows about their disparition. Lor, with an almost evil grin on his face, promises a report of great detail and accuracy. Data leaves, and Lor starts to read all about the Enterprise on the terminal. And I was sold on the idea that Lor was not a friendly character.
Yeah, absolutely, at that point. My first question was, how on earth can you leave him in front of that machine on his own?
Yeah.
But again, because you know he's going to try to do something with it.
Yeah, but we've already compared Data to a young child in some ways, and that's what a child would do, you know. Okay, he's there. I believe him. I will leave him in front of the computer.
Yes, but not necessarily a computer that contains all the details and secrets of absolutely everything.
Which begs another question. How could Lor use that computer and access those files, which are probably behind some kind of security firewall or passwords or things like that? And I think some of them might be, you know, that they... I don't think the schematics of the Enterprise are publicly available.
No. I would imagine that would form part of the technical manual.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it depends on which part of the ship they were in. If they were in like a public area where effectively these were web terminals that they were sat at.
But they weren't opposed to.
Oh, yes. Sorry, I've just seen that. Yes.
Yeah. But still, well, or it's a fault from Data, you know, leaving his terminal open and letting what is essentially a stranger use it without supervision.
Yeah,
somebody needs to do a security audit on the Enterprise.
If I did that at work, I'd probably get fired.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
Always lock your machine before you walk away from it.
Yes, absolutely.
I do that here. I don't need to, but I do it here anyway.
Yeah.
It's just automatic.
But there's no one around, so...
Well, actually, it makes it easier because my new keyboard...
Oh, it has a lock key.
It has a lock. A lock key.
Yeah.
Which works on Linux as well.
What I would like to do is have a... device of some sort that can sense that my phone is nearby and unlock the screen and lock the screen when my phone is not there?
You can probably do it to lock the screen when you're not there through Bluetooth proximity, but I don't think you could unlock it.
No.
You might be able to. You might be able to.
Lock it is already a good thing. You know, just you leave
I'm sure you can do that.
Yep, probably. So, Act 4. On the bridge, Picard and Riker analyze Lor's report. The colonists were killed by a crystalline entity that feeds on life forms and is capable of stripping all life from an entire world.
That explains that.
Yeah. The two androids survived because Lor had been disassembled and Data was not activated yet when the entity attacked. Data was left outside to be found by the first Starfleet crew responding to the signal as a proof that Dr. Soon's experiment did work. Yeah, I found that explanation a bit, a bit far-fetched, but...
A bit too convenient.
Yeah, but I mean, you have to agree that he was lying on some... It almost looked like a sacrifice, you know, like he was standing outside.
Looked like an altar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that didn't work, as if he was there as a sacrifice. Yar tells Picard that Lor has left Data's quarter to go to Deck 4, and Picard tells Data to check up on him. Once he's gone, Yar asks the captain how much he trusts Data now, to which Picard replies that he trusts him completely. In Data quarters, Lor mixes a pill into some Altairian Grand Premier champagne, which he offers to Data when he enters, as his first lesson in becoming more human. Observe their customs. Lor says it's an ancient ritual humans practice when they observe events of importance. He raises his glass and toasts to their discovery of each other. Data drinks the champagne and realizes immediately something is wrong. He collapses and Lore reveals that he learned to communicate with the crystalline entity, which he led to the colonists before it was disassembled. He is planning on attracting it to the Enterprise and give it the lives of the crew. And the funny fact that only us can pick. When he started falling, Brent Spiner fell backwards, and then on the close-up, he was falling on his face.
I've written exactly that. Yes, I spotted that one straight away. He kind of fell. He was fell downwards.
Yeah,
And then literally pole axe straight on his face. So yeah, that was wrong. What was this pill that he mixed? Because if it was in a pill form, androids don't take pills.
Well, they don't drink. So I don't even understand how it could that could affect Data. But anyway.
Oh no, and they do drink.
Yeah,
there are other examples where
yes, that's true,
where they drink alcoholic beverages.
Yeah, yeah,
but
true.
Yeah, don't know.
That falling thing. I noticed that. I also noticed during this week I was watching. What was I? Where did I watch this? I don't remember which series I was watching. Anyway, I noticed that when I watch. A TV series now, I watch it, you know, with the eyes of a reviewer rather than just a viewer. So I noticed all those things that I sometimes tell myself, I'm gonna have to talk about that. And then I realize that, no, I'm not doing a podcast about every series I watch.
Yeah, I do tend to wind up my family when we're sat down in the evening, relaxing, watching a television program, you know, a series that we're all enjoying, we're all, you know, wanting to watch. And all of a sudden, I'll frown, say, who's got the remote, pause the telly, wind it back a bit, and then forward it to one particular frame where something's off that I've spotted, and say, look at that, what's wrong with that? And I sit back and wait to see if anybody can see what it is.
Well, when all they want is for you to press play again.
Precisely. I've become that person.
Yeah,
that picks up on everything.
I know exactly what it is.
It's fun, though.
Yeah. On the bridge, a subspace communication is detected coming from Data's quarters, and Riker sends Wes down to check it out discreetly. I was amused by the smile on whoever's, you know, whatever technician was there when Wesley went. I don't know if that was planned or not, but there was a guy there. We don't know who it is. It's probably just an extra. It was smiling when Riker or Picard said discreetly to Wesley. That was fun.
Yes, yes. Why would you send down an acting ensign, effectively a trainee, to go down and investigate something that is, at this moment in time, inexplicable?
Maybe because there's a kind of friendship between Data and Wesley, so they send him just to not look suspicious?
Maybe.
Yeah, I know, I didn't buy it myself, so... I'm not confident in what I just said, but anyway. Lore is communicating with the crystalline entity. He tells it to identify him as Data. Wes comes in and Data/Lore tells Wesley that Lore/Data attacked him and he had to switch him off. His face twitches and he covers it up, saying he's been practicing Lore's facial twitch.
Yeah, Wesley also picked up on the use of contractions. Of contractions. He's saying that had he had said we've rather than we have, he would have thought that he was Lore.
Yeah, yeah. I guess Lore did that on purpose. The twitch, he just, at this time, he just couldn't stop it.
No, but quick thinking on Lore's part.
Yeah.
But going back to the contraction a second, although... you could argue that he did say, we have. He said it in such a way that you could have mistaken it for a contraction. It was quite a... It wasn't we've. It was more of a we of. But it was yeah. not we have.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I agree with that, yeah.
So I think he was lucky to get away with that.
Yeah. Lore/Data says he's coming up onto the bridge, and after Wes leaves, he uses a small tool and fixes his own Twitch and causes one in Data. So, wait a minute. If that is so easy, why didn't he do it earlier?
Exactly.
I mean, he knows it's something that can help the other identify him as Lore. So why didn't he do that earlier? I don't know. That was weird.
I don't know.
On the bridge, Dr. Crusher asks Wesley what happened, and he tells her that Data turned Lore off, which makes her suspicious since it was their secret. Data/Lore arrives on the bridge and tells Dr. Crusher he had a change of mind about the off switch, that if he couldn't trust the bridge crew, then whom could he? LaForge then detects an unknown object approaching at high speed, which they identify as the crystalline entity. Data/Lore is pleased to see it and says out loud that he finds it beautiful, which makes Dr. Crusher even more suspicious.
Yeah, but it wasn't just that he thought it was beautiful. The actual phrase he used was, "Beautiful, isn't it?"
Yeah, with the
and even Wesley picked up on that use of a contraction.
Yes.
And I think that was the start of Wesley's true suspicion.
Yeah.
I think he decided at that point that wasn't Data.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And we are now in Act 5, the final act and the end of the story. The entity is staying stationary next to the Enterprise, sending no signals. The crew has no idea what it is made of. Picard says they need to question Lore. Wesley loudly protests that he doesn't trust Data/Lore. Picard and Riker are both annoyed at his display and decide that Riker would go with Wesley and Data/Lore to see Lore/Data. I liked how Riker pointed, you know, like pointing with his finger at Wesley and then pointing at the door like, you know, like I would do with my daughter when I'm very angry at her.
Yeah, well, he's still the boy, isn't he?
Yeah.
To some of the crew.
Yeah, yeah. In Data's quarters, Data approaches Lore and causes him to shake by using Data's activation switch to rapidly turn him on and off. That's probably not very good for the circuitry. I mean, if you do that to a computer, you're going to fry it.
No, that's not good. But it's not an on-off switch, is it? It'll be a standby.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Lore tells Riker and Wesley to leave, saying he can't control Lore, in quote, slash Data. Yeah, yeah, you got it. After they leave, he kicks Data in the head in anger, causing part of his skin to come loose and exposing the circuitry on his skull. I didn't really understand why that was relevant, but it was just a nice piece of special effect.
No, I didn't get that one either.
No. On the bridge, Riker tells Picard what happens, but Wesley is still not convinced. The crystalline entity brushes against the shields. Data/Lore rushes in and says he wants to talk to it. He tells it the humans here are powerful, capable of injuring or even destroying it. The crystalline entity backs off, and Data suggests beaming something like a tree out into space and destroying it in a show of force. Picard agrees.
What?
Data calls Riker, and not Sir.
Miss that.
Yeah. Also, he didn't understand make it so.
Yes.
If that is not a proof that it's Lore, then I agree with Lore. Humans are stupid. I mean, everything was there. I mean, yeah. Really, sometimes the crew is not very bright.
But beaming a tree,
yeah,
out into space and then destroying it,
yeah,
that is so not something Data would have suggested.
No.
In fact, I don't think there's anybody on that ship that would have suggested it, because it is such a stupid thing to suggest.
Yeah.
I now understand, because we know how the episode continues, why he has suggested that. But at the same time, I'm very surprised that neither Riker nor Picard, and possibly not even Yar or LaForge,
nobody,
didn't understand the implications of what he suggested.
Yeah, nobody. Data leaves, but Wesley continues to protest. He tries again to convince Picard that Data is really low, but the captain refuses to listen and dismisses him, telling him to, my quote of the week, shut up, Wesley.
Well, that's not my quote of the week. The next one is.
Ah, one after that. Okay.
Yes.
Picard orders Worf to monitor what Data does, since it is unusual. At last.
Duh.
Beverly, just as hurt as her son, repeats in shock, shut up, Wesley. Picard dismisses her also and orders them both off the bridge. Wesley, angered, starts to complain, but Beverly fearfully adds, shut up, Wesley, herself, in an attempt to protect her son from further ridicule by the rest of the crew.
That was my quote of the week. It's a tough one to call between, because they were both, you know, good comic timing, but
yes.
Yeah.
And I liked the remark he did that if he had been an adult, it would have been listened to. And I think he's right.
Yeah, that was very good.
Yeah.
That was very well played, because, yeah, any other member of Picard's crew, anybody else on the bridge, would have been taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the difference there is that they might have actually approached it in a slightly different way.
Yes.
As in maybe taking him to one side and said, look, Captain, I think we've got a problem here, not... Oh, I can't remember what he said now.
Yeah, but that he was straight like, on.
Like, you know, boom. Captain, I don't trust him in front of him.
Yeah. Well, that's Wesley.
Mm-hmm.
Worf steps into the turbo lift with Lore, who then assaults him and knocks him unconscious. Lore left about, you know, I don't know, 1-2 minutes before. They had time to argue with Wesley and all that. And suddenly, Worf steps in the elevator with Lore. What there was like Q or something, and then I don't know.
They might have had to have been decontaminated before they went in. There's like an airlock or something.
Maybe.
Emergency clothes?
Yeah, why not?
Okay.
Emergency clothes.
Unless Law picked that up from the research he did in Data's quarters.
Don't you ever need the elevator in your office to close quickly? I mean, every day. Emergency close.
No.
No.
What I tend to do is go either side of the doors and do that.
Yeah.
Try and close it as quickly as possible. But no, it's kind of like Riker said in These Are the Voyages, where he said resume holoprogram in objective mode.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of these things that no one's ever heard of before. Yep. They're never used again, but they're kind of like created as part of the series in order to achieve one particular outcome.
Yes, yes, true. Lore knocked Worf unconscious in like 3 seconds. I don't know if we've seen Worf and Data fight, because it seemed to me that Lore actually had more physical capabilities than Data on this matter. I don't know, to be honest. I don't know, but I don't think that Data is as strong as Lore.
No, I think Lore actually said something about that earlier on in the episode. He said that he had a physical strength advantage over Data.
Uh-huh.
But I can't remember the details around it.
But that was quick. Worf was out in two strikes and boom, bye-bye, Worf.
I thought his hair was going to fall off at one point as he was kind of scraping down the wall of the turbo lift.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Wes has managed to convince Dr. Crusher to stop off at Data's quarters. She sees Data hurt on the ground and switches him on. He tells her he is not badly hurt, and they go to Cargo Bay 3 to stop Lore. Now, how do they know Lore is in Cargo Bay 3? That's another mystery.
Very good.
Also, the computer usually locates people, you know, via their com badges, and Lore didn't have any com badge. So, but yeah, let's say there's, I don't know, motion sensors and things like that, and the computer can track Lore.
Unless Lore was transmitting some kind of beacon that negates the need for a com badge.
Whatever. It's probably that, yeah.
But at what stage had they absolutely confirmed that the android laying down on the ground in Lore's uniform was Data?
Because when he woke up, he said he was Data.
Oh, well, that's okay then. No, that's absolutely fine.
No, but Carry on. Wesley was convinced, and I suppose it could be.
I suppose if you've been in Lore's presence for long enough, and you pick up on his quirk, the things that make him different to Data, and you then go back and talk with Data, you can kind of pick up straight away that you know who the two are.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, Data, Wesley, and Crusher sneak into the cargo bay and hear Lore talking to the crystalline entity. Lore spots Data and Wesley and threatens to kill the boy. Beverly comes out from hiding and pulls a feather on him, but she is too close and he grabs it from her. He then tells her to leave and asks Data to cooperate with him or he will kill Wesley. When he grabbed the phaser, you know, he grabbed Data first and throw Data on her. I think she had lots of time to press on the trigger.
Yeah, she could have done.
She's a doctor. She's not a security officer. So, okay, let's give her the benefit of. I was going to say the doubt, but it's not a doubt. But non-training, not being trained to shoot on people. So, but still, it was long enough for her to react, I think.
Is she not? No, she's a commander, so she would have had training.
She's a lieutenant commander or commander or something.
Yeah, so she would have had training. She must have had training in weapons.
Yeah, probably basic training.
Oh, I suppose, but maybe not the reaction times.
Yeah. Dr. Crusher hesitantly makes her exit, but not before Lore fires his feather at her, igniting the sleeve of her blue lab coat.
I laughed so hard.
Yeah. The first time we see a phaser, you know, make a piece of clothing burn. But
you didn't see the fire initially. You saw it make contact. She got thrown forward by it. And then we shot to another scene and then came back. And she was kind of running out with her arm like this, with flames coming out the top of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that looked a bit... it was obvious it wasn't Gates McFadden in the lab coat. That was obvious.
Taking his chance, Data knocks the phaser out of Lore's hand and they start to brawl. Data throws him into cargo containers and then onto the transporter pad where the phaser landed. Lore fires just as Wes is able to energize the transporter, beaming him out in space.
Shields were up.
Yes, shields were up. Unless Wesley turned the shields down.
But the crystalline entity is still outside.
Yeah.
So bringing the shields down at this particular moment in time would be probably a court-martial offence. Because they're still in whatever alert. I think there might have been a red alert at that point.
Can you beam someone outside of the ship, but still inside?
But inside the shields.
The shields.
I suppose you could, yes.
Yeah, I suppose too. It was weird how the phaser stopped midway when Lore started to be transported.
That was stupid.
Yeah, because if you, you know, imagine it's a beam of energy, then it's moving away from the phaser gun, and then if that is being transported, then there's no reason why the rest of the energy beam would not keep going.
Yes, it would either leave it and carry on,
yeah,
or it would stop at the source.
Yeah, but not like it did in this episode.
Didn't we establish that at the point of transport, you're essentially dead anyway?
Yeah.
And it's not until you get reconstructed at the other end that you effectively become alive again. Yes. Well, surely the moment that the transporter was dematerializing the phaser gun, it would have stopped working.
Yeah.
I might be overthinking this.
Yeah, well, probably. Which is easy to do with the transporter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an unknown, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. Picard, Riker, Yar, and Crusher enter with Phaser's drone to find that Lore is gone. With no way to reach the crew, the crystalline entity leaves. Picard orders Data to get rid of that damn Twitch and to find a proper uniform as the Enterprise resumes course for a computer refit. And everything is well again.
That was a rushed ending again.
Yeah. Well, everything was rushed, I think, in this episode. Mm. From it would have been a good two-parter, I think.
Yeah, I think they could have fleshed that out. They could have had a bit more detail in some of the storyline, a bit more detail, a bit more character building of Lore and yeah. Lore and Data's relationship. The crystalline entity wouldn't have just gone, oh well, never mind, let's try somewhere else.
Yeah,
because that's just daft.
And the way Lore was talking to the crystalline entity was also hilarious. As it was talking to her, to it, like if it was a child or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
And the fact that nobody found that it was weird that Data could communicate with the crystalline entity and everything that we have already mentioned.
Did Data communicate with the entity?
No, it was Lore, but yes. Posing as Data. And nobody, you know, nobody asked themselves, how? Well, why? How do you do that? Why would you say that? But. Yeah, so it was not a bad episode. It was just rushed. Great performance from Brett Spiner playing two characters.
Oh, and I'm sorry, I've got to do... we've got to give recognition to the production team for the fight scene between Data and Lore.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I'm not in the industry, but I can certainly imagine how difficult it might be to try and have two actors... performing the role of two separate characters in the same scene.
Mm-hmm.
And you see this a lot with various films and TV series where, you know, a good and an evil counterpart of the same character fight, or twins or anything like that. But I was really impressed with how they handled that fight scene towards the end with Brent Spiner playing both characters. It was very well put together.
Yes, yes. There was no technical problems, I didn't think, except for the cardboard set when they arrived on Data's planet. Yes. But that's a recurring thing. I guess it's what they did at the time in 1987,
88. Yeah.
You know, they were not. They didn't have the technical capabilities they have now. You know, when you see. Actually, I was going to say when you see what they did on Picard, but most of the planets Picard visited were Earth-like.
Yes, they were for the most part.
So they didn't really need a lot of special effects in there,
no.
Except makeups. But apart from that, it was a bit rushed. Still very interesting to meet the evil counterpart of Data. It's one of those episodes that... We will remember this one because it has Lore, but I don't think it's a very memorable one. It doesn't strike me as a wonderful episode.
No, it was okay. It worked. Yeah. Yes, I totally agree with you. It was rushed. It could easily have been done better. I did like the character. I like what they did with Lore. I like the interaction between the two. Yeah, it was a nice introduction to. Now, I understand we do see Lore again, don't we?
Yes.
Because, obviously, putting an android into space is probably going to have no impact.
Yeah. There's at least one... Well, there's one episode that's for sure. I think that might be two other episodes.
There are three more.
Three more, yes.
Yeah, there's one in season four, and then the season six finale, season seven opener.
Yes, okay, so that's it. So
yeah, four in total.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked the way they made Lore, you know, go from almost friendly brother to Data to evil thing, evil android, using both Brent Spiner's acting and also shooting differently towards the end when he was in the bad guy and things like that. So, yeah, it's an average episode and not the worst of the series, but definitely not one of the top 10 best ones.
No, well, I don't know because I've only seen what. 13?
Yeah, so
13 episodes.
Yeah, there's a chance that if you only take those 13 into account, then it's in the top 10 of the of the series.
Well, it's not difficult, is it? Really?
Yeah.
Little bit of trivia. Lore was apparently originally intended to be female to provide as a love interest. But apparently it was Brent Spiner who suggested that the concept of the evil twin be used instead, which is quite interesting. There was a female android storyline in the third season, episode The Offspring.
Data's daughter.
Yeah, exactly. Did it as Data's daughter rather than love interest.
Well, if you don't have anything to add to this review...
There was probably more, but...
I guess we can end this review of Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1, Episode 13, Data Lore.
Right, so another call-out, please, if anybody would like to join me, because Yannick has decided he needs time off. Our Episode 49 and 50, Yannick will be taking time off, so he won't be present in either of those episodes. Episode 49, Caroline's going to co-host with me, so that's absolutely fine. But I do need a co-host for Episode 50. We have established already that me trying to do this show on my own would be an absolute car crash. So we do need somebody to co-host with me. I have had a couple of offers, so there we do have potential fallback. But if you are interested in co-hosting Episode 50 with me, which I think we said was going to be recorded on August the 5th. Just want to double-check that. Yes, that's right. What are we on now? 46. So, yeah, August the 5th. Then please do drop us a line and let us know. We'll be giving the ways to contact us very shortly.
So, thanks to everyone who downloaded our previous episodes. We really appreciate you spending a little bit of your precious, precious time to listen to our show. You can help us spread the love for this very podcast by hiring the Red Arrows, or whatever your equivalent National Aerobatics display team is, to write the address of our website in bright colors in the sky. Or if you think that we are starting to get really silly with those suggestions, and we are, you can come up with your own, or simply share our website on social media.
And our website is at tlgreyhot.org, where you can find our show notes, our reviews, and you can leave a comment at the bottom of every one of our show notes.
Also, you can send us an email, if you are so inclined, at feedback@tlgreyhot.org. That's also where you can send your proposition for co-hosting episode 50 with Dave. And if you send us something interesting, we might read it on the show. Unless, of course, you tell us otherwise.
We are on Twitter and Facebook. Our username on both of those services is TEGH Podcast. And we're also on Telegram. You can find us there at t.me/TEGH Podcast. And that is the only place you will get the link to our unlisted YouTube video. So you can come along and watch us completely butcher the recording of this episode live.
Yes. And thank you to Lenny, our communications officer.
Yes, of course we promoted her from social media manager to communications officer, quite rightly too.
Yeah. Thanks to Memory Alpha, as always, we have based our review of this week's episode on their work, and this is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution non-commercial license.
The rest of the show is released under Creative Commons by Attribution share-alike license. For more details of what that means, please go to our website.
Of course, this podcast is part of the Other Side Podcast Network. We have said that already. Check out our website at otherside.network to find out our collection of great shows of, many, many topics.
And I'm sure there will be something on there for your interest.
Yes.
The next episode will be a review of Star Trek The Next Generation, Season 1, Episode 14, Angel 1.
And that brings us to the end of this week's show. Thank you, Dave, for joining me this week once again.
Of course, I had nothing better to do.
Oh, okay, so that's why you're there. Okay. Yep. Thanks to Chris from Canada, who was on our live YouTube chat room thingy. Thanks to everyone who's listening to this show. We will be back next week. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Ciao, ciao.
See ya. Pulling, trying to do it.
That was so funny.
Oh, bear with.
Thinking about kids.
Yeah. Right on cue. Right. Please hold the line a moment.
I do.
While the children arrive and make as much noise as they possibly can.
That gives me. Good evening, children.
Yannick says good evening.
Hi.
Did you hear that?
Yeah. I think the whole neighborhood heard them.
Resident foghorns.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, no, please.
No, no, go.
No, no, go on.
No, no, go. That's for the blooper. Worf steps into the turbo lift with Lore when two assault...
The rest of this show is released under a creative... Try again. That's what CC means, isn't it?
You've been listening to a member of the Other Side Podcast Network. Find more about our shows at othersidenetwork.com.